All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez.
Welcome back to All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez. I got an interesting topic for you here today. Thank you for listening in. This topic came into my mind as I was reading the word. I was reading in Matthew 15. And the story goes that the elders, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, they asked Jesus, "Why do your disciples violate the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread." And I started to think, as I started to read this, Jesus is telling them that the most important thing that they had to do was not look at the traditions of the Jews back in the days and the elders that they had. But the most important thing they had to do was watch out for the things that come out of them. Not the natural food that goes inside of them, or not whether they wash their hands or cleanse the inside of the outside of the cup, or the inside of the cup, or the rim of the cup. See, because they had these traditions, they were to do rituals before they were to eat. They washed their, and when I say rituals, I mean wash their hands, clean their dishes, things like that. So they would consider themselves ritually clean. And the thing is that they had to learn that the tide was changing. And that's what I want to talk about in this segment. In a little bit, I'll be getting into some early NFL power rankings. I'll be getting into Bobby Bonilla Day. But in this segment, I want to talk about the tide changing. The tide is changing. And I want to speak on a couple of things where I believe that the tide is changing. Now, to go back to Matthew 15, Jesus is telling them that they have made no effect of their tradition because the way that they treated God, because the way that they treated their families, because the way that they treated each other, because the way that they treated others, they made no effect of the traditions. Meaning that the traditions had no effect on people because they weren't helping people. So if you tell me that I have a certain ritual, that I have a certain tradition, and that tradition doesn't edify anybody, doesn't help anybody, is that tradition any good? But the tradition and the thing that Jesus was trying to get them to see was that what they really had to hold on to was they had to be faithful to God, not to rituals, not to routines. So Jesus was telling them that the way to God is through me, is through Jesus. Not through saying, "Oh, I fast and people see that I fast. I wash my cup before I eat. I wash my hands before I eat. That means that I'm a clean person." So that means that if I'm clean on the outside, I'm clean on the inside. That is not what that means. That's what Jesus was trying to get them to see. And that's why he told them that they were whitewashed tombs, meaning that on the outside they look good, but inside they're dead. They were rotting. So he tried to get the scribes and the Pharisees to see this while he was on earth for 3.5 years. Well, while his ministry was active for 3.5 years, he tried to get them to see this. When he was revealed as a miracle worker, when he was revealed as a healer, as a deliverer, when he was revealed as a preacher, as a teacher. So he goes on and he tells them that, "You draw near to me with your mouth and you honor me with your lips, but your heart is far from me." He continues in saying, In vain you worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. So they're teaching that to be clean on the outside is what shows your holiness, your dedication to God. And a lot of people held on to that. A lot of people in that time held on to that. And I'm sure that there are people in this time that hold on to that as well. But the thing was that Jesus was showing them that the tide is changing. That no longer you had to live under the law. No longer you had to live under rules and regulations that you had to follow under a priest. But now the real priest was here, which is Jesus Christ. See, what the things you read in the Old Testament were a foreshadowing, were a showing of what was to come spiritually through Jesus. So there were a lot of things that the people had to do to keep themselves ritually right in the Old Testament before Jesus came. But the tide was changing, where they no longer had to do these things, because the plan of God was always the Savior. The plan of God was always Jesus Christ for us to live this way. The reason why back in that time it happened that way was because God had to show humanity. God had to show people, you can't do it by yourself. You can't do it on your strength. This is not the way, but I'm going to send the way. And then Jesus goes on to say that he is the way, the truth, and the life. Now, don't get me mistaken. People back in the Old Testament days, yes, when they died, if they loved God, they went to heaven. Because there were also rituals that God said, you got to complete, you got to show that your heart is with me. And we understand that there were people of God, Moses, David, a lot of other people that were in the Old Testament. But God didn't want people to continue in this way, because he had to show them first, for thousands of years, that way is broken. I gave you a way to be saved. I gave you a way into heaven. But that way is not as good as this way. And this way was on earth. And this way, the way, was telling them, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life, I'm the Son of God. I'm the one that you read about that was coming. I'm the one that's going to tell you traditions and your own strength and your own thought and your own wisdom is not enough. It's not the way. I'm the way. So he continues to tell them, as he called the crowds, he said, I want you to hear, I want you to understand, that what goes into the mouth does not defile a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, that defiles a man. So he's letting them know, listen, it's not about what you eat. It's not about your rituals. It's not about all these other things. It's about the things that you allow to come out of you. The things that you allowed, and he's getting into it spiritually. He's saying, it's not about the natural. It's about the spiritual. So that which goes into you, food and hygiene and all these things, that's not greater than the things that come out of you. Because the things that come out of you, and we're talking about speech, we're talking about thoughts, that's what he was talking about. Don't worry about the natural things. Worry more about the spiritual things. He goes on to tell them, those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile the man. This is the point that Jesus was trying to get across to them. So the tide was changing in the respect of how you got forgiveness, how you got the washing and cleansing of your sins. Because in the Old Testament, under the Old Covenant, when you went to the priest, your sins were covered. This is the way God viewed it. But through Jesus, the Son of God, God himself in the flesh, when he died, shed his blood, resurrected. Now, your sins, when you say, forgive me, they're not covered. They are washed away. This is what Jesus was trying to show them. That the greater way is here. We showed you a way. But that way required your strength. And that way is not perfect. So your way is not perfect. My way is perfect. So he's letting them know here that out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, sexual immoralities, thefts, false witnesses, and blasphemies. He says, these are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands, that does not defile a man. So I'm not here to talk about washing your hands and hygiene and COVID and things like that. That's not what I'm here to talk about. What I'm here to say is that the tide is changing. I'm here to tell you that the tide is changing. Just as the tide was changing in that time, when Jesus says, don't worry about these things. Worry about this. Worry about what comes out of you. Worry about what's in your heart instead of what you're showing people through your rituals, through your fakeness. Worry about who you really are instead of showing people what they want to see, or what you think they want to see. So the tide is changing in certain things, I believe. I believe that one of the things that the tide is changing in is Iran. I want to give you a little fact about Iran. Iran has been done by Pew Research Center. Iran is the fastest growing Christian community in the world. Iran is growing at about 5% of their population each year over year in Christianity. Now, where that's going to end up, God only knows. Missionaries, evangelists are doing their job. God is speaking to people in dreams. They're coming out of Muslim, Islam, and things like that. Iran is the fastest growing Christian community in the world. That's amazing. For a place that practices the things that they practice, the religions that they practice, that is amazing. So the tide was changing from the old guard to the new guard. This is what Jesus was letting them know. The ways are changing. And now, the tide is changing in Iran. The second fastest Christian community, the second fastest growing Christian community in the world, is in China. And it's amazing because before 1945, before I believe it was World War II ended, or around the time of World War II, there were only about 4 million Christians in China. And the thing is that China's been a communist country for years, and yet Christianity continues to grow. And Pew Research Center also did a finding where there are over 40 million Christians in China. Some estimate that there are about nearly 70 million, right? They did this study in about 2010. And then with the most updated studies, they're saying that it's even closer to 70 million. So about, I think, 1% or 2% of their population, something like that. So China continues to grow in Christianity. China is continuing to see increase in Christianity, which is something you probably thought you would have never seen. It's something I thought. I'm like, man, China, that's a Buddhist country. They practice Buddhism. They practice, some people practice Muslim, Islam, things like that. And it's just amazing to see that Christianity is growing. And that some believe that with all the underground churches and all the people that don't say that, you know, that don't come out in public and say that they are Christians in China, that there's about maybe 200 million out of the 2 billion people in China. So the numbers continue to increase. The numbers continue to grow. And it's an amazing thing to see that in China, in a communist country, it's also happening. It's also happening. The word is spreading. Christians are coming, you know, to just amazing numbers in these countries, in these third world countries, in these countries where they're dictators and there's communism. You know, I know that North Korea has the most persecuted Christians. I don't know the number of how many Christians are there. It's in the millions, but it is the most persecuted Christian community in the world. So take some time, pray for North Korea, pray for the dictator out there that God will change his heart, and pray also the strength and guidance and wisdom of the church in North Korea. So the numbers are staggering. Hundreds of millions of Christians around the world, billions of Christians around the world. And when I say around the world, I'm talking about outside of America, because Christianity is still the largest religion here in America. And that's great. A lot of people are practicing what they preach. A lot of people aren't. But the roots that they have are Christian, are Christian roots for the most part. So in that is also Catholics, Protestants, and things of that nature. But Christianity is still number one here in America. But Christianity is growing really, really fast in Indonesia. Christianity is growing amazingly, like I said, in Iran. Christianity is growing amazingly in Asia. It's growing amazingly in India. I mean, millions and millions of people. At least the last study that was done, was at least 30 million people in India. But I've heard numbers and it's more than that. The numbers that I've heard are more. What numbers are true? What numbers aren't? I'm not going to be here to say that, but Pew Research Center does great work. And I really just shout them out because they go around and they try to get these numbers. They go into countries, they ask questions, they look in, you know, with the government, things like that. They ask people around, they go to churches. Other people give other numbers, but I really trust the things that Pew Research Center does. They have a lot of numbers on Jewish Christians and things like that. The number continues to increase, not as fast as Chinese, not as fast as Indians, not as fast as Indonesians, not as fast as Iranians. But yes, Jewish people are also waking up to the fact that Jesus is the Messiah. And that's a great thing. So the tide is changing. The tide is changing in certain places. Another thing that the tide is changing on that I want to talk about is legalism. Legalism in the church. I know that a lot of people have been, you know, hurt by it. They've been upset by it. They said, I'm never going back to church because these people are just legalistic. These people, all they talk about is clothes and hair and rules. And back in the day, years ago, I heard a woman say, man, I miss the times where you will go to church and they would check the women's skirt. And if it wasn't long enough, or their undergarment under the skirt, if it wasn't long enough, they send you home. And I'm like, yeah, that right there is a legalistic heart and a legalistic mindset. I don't miss those days at all. I wasn't around those days, but I don't miss those days. And that comes from somebody who was telling me how church was in PR back in, I don't know, the 60s, the 70s. That's just something that shouldn't be happening. Now, I do believe in modesty, but the fact that somebody stood at the door with a ruler or something like that and was like, oh, is this long? No. Is this short? Go home. That's legalism. That, come on now. I would not miss those days. That's oppression. Jesus said, come as you are. So when you're new to the church, he expects you to come as you are. Then in time, through his Holy Spirit, he's going to speak to you on what you should change. But for you to walk in the door and people throw you the rule book before they throw you the good book, that's incorrect. So nowadays, you know, a couple years ago, I was visiting a church and I went to preach. And the young man that was with me, he was going to play the drums. And they didn't have a drummer that night. So he's like, hey, I play drums. So they said to him, all right, cool. But you need to wear a tie. Because the pastor here does not allow people to play without a tie on. And he was like, all right, fine, no problem. You know, the look on his face said it all. But he was like, no problem. You know, he just wanted to worship God through playing the drums and helping out the church. Then he put the tie on. It completely didn't match with him, but they just put a tie on him. And after we left, obviously, you know, he was discouraged. He was like, man, I just can't believe that. That's just incredible. The level that they go to. And some people think, well, we're better than you because we have these rules. We're better than you because, or we're more holy or sanctified than you because we have these rules in place. And that's legalism. Us looking at being better than somebody because we have certain rules. No, if we follow the word of God to the T, the way that he says, that's when we're doing exactly what Jesus wanted us to do. Which is not look at routines, not look at regulations, not look at traditions, but look at him, look at what God said in his word, follow that. And from there, the Spirit of God will lead us and guide us on all the ancillary things, the secondary things for sure. But for us to think that, oh, we're better, we're mightier than, we're higher than thou, because we don't allow you to do this or allow you to do that. Long time ago, people weren't allowed in certain churches to go to the movies. They weren't allowed to go to the movies. That doesn't mean that you're better. That just means that you have a certain amount of rules and some strict stuff that a lot of people just don't want to follow. So the tide is changing on that because you see less and less of that now. You see less and less of, oh, you can't go to the movies. I don't even know a church anymore that says that. You can't go to the movies. That's of the devil. I hope that there aren't churches that are still like, hey, you got to wear a tie to do everything here. I'm not sure because I don't know how this church updated their code or not. I honestly don't know. I'm pretty sure that there aren't churches anymore that are standing by the door saying, hey, the skirt is this long or the undergarment is this long. You can't come in. You got to go home and change, put it a little longer. You can't shave as a woman. You can't do a lot of things that are just oppressing people and hurting people and putting people, you know, just in a discouraging state. Because they want you to focus on what's inside of them the way that Jesus said, focus on what's inside instead of on what's outside. Talking about no makeup, no earrings. A woman wants to look good for her husband. The husband wants the woman to look good for him too. He wants to be turned on by her. And there were a lot of legalistic churches that were like, no, you can't do that. But the tide has changed on that. And the tide continues to change, and that's a good thing. The last thing I want to talk about the tide changing, and this has a lot to do with social media, is pornography. There is a organization called Fight the New Drug, and they've been doing some great things on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. They have a lot of facts and a lot of stories about how people are trafficked in the porn industry. Like I've said before on this podcast, I gave up on porn in 2016, thank God. And one of the things that has helped me to stay away, other than obviously I know it's wrong, but one of the other things is I have a daughter. And another thing is that I don't even know the people that I'm watching on screen, or that I used to watch on screen, are people that are trafficked, humanly smuggled. I have no idea. How would I know? They don't say that. They don't give you a disclaimer. So I don't want to do wrong by God, number one. I don't want to watch somebody else's daughter or somebody's son, because I have children. I wouldn't want them to be doing that. And I don't want to watch people who are smuggled across wherever they're smuggled being forced into, coerced into doing acts in front of a camera that they don't want to do. But if they don't do them, they'll get killed. They'll get sent back to where they came from. Whatever the case may be. And this organization, Fight the New Drug, has come out on that, and they've talked about it. And there's another organization, I believe it's called Trafficking Hub. I believe so. But I know that the lady that's running this other organization, her name is Layla Micklewaite, and I follow her on all platforms, and she always releases stories on how, you know, the trafficking issues and people doing things against their will and their testimonies and things like that. But the thing that really, really got me this year was that Visa, surprisingly, Visa said no to the business. And they said, we are not going to accept any more business from X company here, because you guys are putting up videos that have traffic children and rape children. Now, why would anybody want to watch that? Is just mind-boggling and crazy to me. So the tide has been changing on people and their perception of this, what they call adult entertainment. And I'm glad, and that's a good thing, because the tide should have been changing. But with the advent of social media and journalists and other people getting stories out there and people getting their testimonies out there, that's a great thing. That's a great thing that helps the tide to turn. Because all of a sudden now, you take this attitude and you're saying, wait, hold up. So these are not people that are signing contracts under their own will. Wait, hold on. I'm watching crime on television or on my phone and thinking that this is okay. So all of a sudden now, Visa steps up and said, no, we're not taking your business. We are not allowing people to pay through our services for your site, because you are putting up crimes on this site, and that's wrong. That's a good, that is a huge blow to that industry. And the tide has been turning on that. So shout out to Fight the New Drug. Shout out to Trafficking Hub. Shout out to Pure Life Ministries. A brother also wrote a book called At the Altar of Sexual Idolatry, which that definitely changed the way that I looked at immorality and sexual issues with his testimony and the way he backed it up with the Bible. Pastor Steve Gallagher, amazing, amazing work. The tide is also changing on Hispanics and Republicans. Yeah, on this show, I get into everything. That's why it's called All Talks of Life with Chris Beniquez. Because I want to talk about everything. A little while, like I said, I'm about to get into some sports. But last thing I'll say, I know before I said it was the last thing, but this one is the last thing. And then I'll switch segments. Hispanic people, my people. My parents are born in Puerto Rico. My grandparents are born in Puerto Rico. I'm born here in Brooklyn, New York, where I'm currently filming this, recording this. So I'm from the United States of America. And for a long time, as a Hispanic American, I grew up thinking that Republicans were evil, that they were the enemy, because that's what they said on Hispanic news television. I got a family member who's married to someone that's not from this country, and that person only speaks Spanish. But that person watches Spanish news television. And one day Donald Trump was talking, and he said something, I don't know, I don't even know what it was. And they cut it off. And a guy comes on and says, everything he just said is a lie. And my family member starts laughing and saying, man, this is complete garbage, he tells his spouse. But the spouse, you know, can't say anything or can't refute anything because, you know, the spouse doesn't know how to talk English. So the spouse is only being fed from Univision or Telemundo the garbage that they spew. But they're Hispanic Americans like me, like others in my family who speak English, who have access to reading and seeing things from people, credible journalists, people who are putting truth out there. Because when we look at things and we try to add things up, and the way that we were raised in my family, okay, starting with my great-grandfather, man of God, that taught his family to love Jesus and to respect the word of God and to live by the word of God. When we add things up, all of a sudden we're saying, wait, hey, these people are lying to us. The policies that they're putting in place in the Democratic Party, this ain't what we were taught. But we're not, but some people don't understand that and don't see that because they don't have access to a Spanish-speaking bipartisan. And when I say bipartisan, I mean not liberal, not conservative, not Democrat, not Republican, just straight down the middle, going to give you the facts kind of organization. But the tide is turning because in 2008 and 2012, not a lot of Hispanic Republicans were out there and voting. And a lot of Hispanics voted for Barack Obama. But in 2016, the tide started changing because Hispanic Americans started hearing the values that they were taught when they were younger by their families coming out of the mouth of Donald Trump. And all of a sudden, now, they started voting for Republicans a little more, but not as much as in 2020. There's a lot of numbers out there that speak to it. Texas, Florida, New York. Donald Trump got over 30% of the vote, which is insane for a Republican here in New York. I think it got close to 40, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. Go look it up. But I think it got close to 40. But a lot of that was Republican voting Hispanics. And Republican voting Hispanics are on the rise because they're being educated to who has the values that they were raised on. So the tide is turning on a lot of things, y'all. Continue to look out for that. Hit me up. Let me know what you think the tide is turning on. I want to continue to speak on this. Coming up, I'm getting into some NFL, and I'm going to finish out the show wishing you a happy Bobby Bonilla Day. All Talks of Life. I'll be right back. Early power rankings right now. It's July right now. The reason why I stress the word early is because preseason hasn't even started yet. So there are guys that can get hurt. These power rankings definitely could change. The thing is that mini camps have wrapped up. The draft long ago. OTAs are done. So everybody's good and ready to go. Game-changing players are healthy. Game-changing players have been given contracts and free agency and things like that. Julio Jones got traded. So mostly everything is wrapped up. Player movement is done. And the only thing left is preseason games where things could change. Because in mini camps and OTAs, we've seen guys that they've gotten torn Achilles, blown knees, messed up backs, broken necks. It doesn't happen every single offseason where a game-changing person, a game-changing player gets a big injury, a season-ending injury, but it has happened. So all that's out the way now. All that's out the way. And now what we got ahead of us is the preseason. So now with the preseason ahead of us, we're not there yet, about a month away, month and a half away. 3 games of preseason, extra game this year, 17th game. That's awesome. I love it. But I want to give some early power rankings because I'm excited for this NFL season that's coming up. Some good teams in the NFL. Some good teams that I believe that could get it done. Thing about the NFL is that there's a lot of parity. That's a good thing in some ways, a bad thing in other ways. But I think that it's for the health and the goodness of the sport. The NBA doesn't have a lot of parity. They thought they were going to get some parity in 2020. And then obviously things ended up being a little boring. I wasn't feeling the 2020 season. I tuned out. Baseball is a probabilistic sport. And there's a lot of more evenness because the way the game is played, hockey's the same way. A lot of things have to go right for a baseball team and a hockey team to get the championship. Basketball's a little different. You could dominate with one player. People are getting started early on 4th of July. So if you hear fireworks in my background, is right out my room window. People getting started early, y'all. But I want to get started on some fireworks too, because I talked to some people and I got a little pushback. I got some people saying, I don't agree with the list. That's fine. That's cool. Not everybody's going to agree on everything, but I want to state why I got the power rankings the way that I do. All right? At number one, I got the Chiefs. The reason why I say the Chiefs are number one and not the Bucks. And if you want to put the Bucks at number one, that's fine. I'm cool with that. I won't debate it. I understand why people are going to put the Bucks at number one. They got the GOAT. They brought back all 22 starters from the Super Bowl. I understand that. But the reason why I got the Chiefs at number one in the early power rankings is because the Chiefs added 3 linemen this offseason. The Chiefs in the Super Bowl, their weakness was the offensive line. Shaq Barrett, JPP, Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea. They got through that offensive line like a wet paper bag. You understand what I'm saying? So all of a sudden now, they went from having a weakness to having a strength. They traded for Orlando Brown Jr., who they got from the Ravens. I'll be talking about the Ravens in a little bit because they're in my top 10. They also went out and got one of the best guards in the league in Joe Thuney, okay? They also upgraded the left tackle position. Eric Fisher had torn his Achilles. He was a 4-1 number one overall pick for the Chiefs. He never became the guy that they thought he was going to become anyway, but he did win a Super Bowl with them at left tackle. They went out, man. They got 3 offensive line guys that could play. Mitchell Schwartz, the right tackle, one of the best right tackles in the league, messed up his back. So that he wasn't able to play in the Super Bowl, and that hampered him, you know, during the season. But they upgraded the offensive line. So what was the weakness in the Super Bowl is now going to be one of the strengths. You give Pat Mahomes a little more time. You saw what he did with barely enough time, scrambling for 500 yards before he ever threw the ball. You saw what he did. There were three drop passes in that game by guys who had a touchdown. All right. Pat Mahomes had 21 points in people's hands, in guys' hands in that Super Bowl. Give Pat Mahomes a little more time. You see what's going to happen. So that's why I got them at number one. Kelsey's coming back. Hill's coming back. They lost Sammy Watkins. Clyde Edwards-Helaire's coming back. But this team still got Pat Mahomes, and they got a better offensive line than they did last year. So, I'm going with the Chiefs at number one. Number two, I'm going with the Bucks. They got the GOAT. Bruce Arians is coming back. They want a repeat like they said that they wanted to. They wanted the repeat. He said, we're bringing all 22 back. That's exactly what they did. Shout out to Bruce Arians. Big time move by Bruce Arians, by the GM of the Bucks. But number one shout out has to go to the owner who said, you know what? I want another chip. I'm going to shell out this money. Shout out to that man right there. Number three, I got the Rams. And here's the thing, though. I went out and I showed a couple of my boys who I really trust to have NFL knowledge, football knowledge, the list that I got. So they know who they are. They know who they are. They're listening right now. They know who they are. And they said, hey, man, I'd probably put the Bucks at number one. Like I said, I'm cool with that. Their big problem, and maybe the big problem of the listener right now, is the Rams at number three. I'm going to explain why. I got the Rams at number three, right behind the Chiefs, right behind the Bucks, the world champion Bucks. I got them at number three. My thing is that Matthew Stafford is such an improvement over Jared Goff that they should be the second best team in the NFC. Okay? They should be what they were a couple of years ago when they made the Super Bowl. And now they got a better quarterback. Sean McVay's still there. Last time I checked, the best defensive player in the league, Aaron Donald, the most dominant defensive player in the league, is still there. Terrorizing offensive lines. You got to have at least two guys on the offensive line to block them. Sometimes they even put three. They got the best defensive player in the NFL on the Rams. It's not even a debate in my mind. Bobby Wagner's great. Jalen Ramsey's great. Stephon Gilmore's great. TJ Watt, who got robbed of the Defensive Player of the Year award, he is great. I'll say that Aaron Donald didn't deserve the Defensive Player of the Year award last season. I'll say that. But I think that he's still the best defensive player overall in the NFL. Jalen Ramsey's back there, y'all. Jalen Ramsey, to me, is the second best corner in the league. Some people debate he's number one. I'll take Stephon Gilmore. But he's right there. It's 1A. It's 1 and 1A or 1A and 1B, whichever one you want to say. Jalen Ramsey might be the best corner in the league. Jalen Ramsey's benefiting off of Aaron Donald, he might be the second best. I don't know whichever one it is, but he's top two for sure. The Rams got two of the top three defensive players in the NFL. The Rams, their receiving core is not that bad. Cam Akers is coming along. And with essentially almost the same team, they made the Super Bowl a couple years ago. A Super Bowl that I liked. I know it was 13-3. A lot of people listening right now, and like, I was a boring Super Bowl. I enjoyed the fact that Bill Belichick and Sean McVay were playing chess while the audience was playing checkers. So I liked it, though. But I got the Rams at number three. They went 10-6 last year in the best division in the NFL. The NFC West got four teams. All right, this ain't the NFC least, that they got no teams. All right, you got one team. You got Washington, at least last season. Because the Cowboys stunk, the Giants stunk, and the Eagles definitely stunk. But the NFC least, an injury here, an injury there. You got one team. Maybe you got no teams. The division stinks. I like the front seven for the Washington football team. But here's what I'll say, man. 10-6 Rams last year. I believe that John Matthew Stafford is worth about 3 wins. He's a talented brother. He'd have no team, had no team. Nobody could debate this. All he ever had was Calvin Johnson. He didn't have a great offensive line holding him up. They were middle of the pack. He never had a great running back to keep the defenses honest. He didn't have a great defense. They just didn't draft well. They drafted him. And you saw that. You saw him coming. You knew this guy was going to be a really good player, if not a great player. I mean, the brother's got talent. He's got a rocket for an arm. He can go to work. He can put in some work. I believe in John Matthew Stafford. So I think that he's worth about 3 wins. I think that they'll go 13-4. It might go 14-3, something like that. I wouldn't bet on 14-3, but I think that they could go 13-4. The Seattle Seahawks won 12-4 last year. They're bringing back basically the same team. They're bringing back Chris Carson. I know the quarterback. He definitely is better in Seattle. I get that. I won't deny that. They're bringing back DK Metcalf. They're bringing back Tyler Lockett. They don't have a great tight end. Tight end is important in this league now. They upgraded the offensive line. I don't think they got a game changer at the offensive line, but they upgraded the offensive line. So that might get they might get a 13th win. They might stay at 12 wins. Their defense ain't that great. Their defense will bend most of the time. It'll break at times. They do have Bobby Wagner. They do have Jamal Adams. They got to get Jamal Adams signed. They got to get Jamal Adams his money. The brother deserves his money. Get him his money before y'all go through an Aaron Rodgers situation with this dude right here. And they gave up multiple first-round picks to get this guy. They need to shore that up. But if the Seahawks are a 12-win team and they bring him back basically the same team, granted, the offensive line's a little better. They might get 13 this year. I'm thinking that the Rams are going to get 13. You get that little tiebreaker. And the Rams get that tie-breaking win. Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe Seattle get 14 wins. Maybe the upgrade on the offensive line is that much better. Hey. I know Russell Wilson is good. Thing is, though, if the Rams' defense is clicking, if that offensive line didn't get upgraded the way that Russell Wilson thinks it got upgraded and Aaron Donald is on your tail, that's going to be a tough division to win. San Francisco's there. If Jimmy G could stay upright, they could do some things. Arizona, they got a much-needed upgrade at center in Rodney Hudson, who's one of the best centers in the NFL. They traded with the Las Vegas Raiders. I just believe that the NFL's best defensive player, and in my opinion, the second best cornerback in the NFL, are going to anchor that defense to give Matthew Stafford enough to get more games than the Seattle Seahawks. That's what I believe in, and that's why I'm going with them to be number one in the division, and I believe they'll be number two in the conference, behind the world champion Bucks. They still got Cooper Kupp. They still got Robert Woods. I don't know if DeSean Jackson is going to make a big difference. They still got Tyler Higbee. So they still got the ageless wonder at left tackle and Andrew Whitworth. Hopefully he continues to stay on and they could do what they got to do. I got them going number 3 in the NFC. All right. I got to keep going from there. I got the Packers at number 4. If Aaron Rodgers plays. If Aaron Rodgers plays for the Packers. I got the Titans at number 5. I know that some people put the Titans at number 3. I thought about that. But then I thought about the upgrade at quarterback that the Rams got and how much I love their defense. Leonard Floyd is still there in Los Angeles, I believe. And if Leonard Floyd is still there with the Rams, that defense is definitely going to be a problem because he's up and coming. But the Titans, someone put them at number 3. I thought about it. The reason why I don't put them at number 3 is because the pass rush hasn't been that good and is not going to be much better this season. Jadeveon Clowney, he went to the Browns. They put Bud Dupree in there. Bud Dupree is coming from my Steelers off an ACL injury. They also got Janoris Jenkins as a cornerback, but they also got rid of Adoree Jackson. So the defense is going to be pretty much the same. They got to come up with some kind of defensive scheme so that they can at least give Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, and A.J. Brown something to work with. Something to work with. So, thing is that I just think that this team is going to be really, really tough to tackle. The reason why I thought about having them number 3 but didn't put them at number 3 is because their defense is not good enough. Their defense is not going to be... Kenny Vaccaro, he's a good safety. But their defense up front, I just don't think is good enough to give them number 3 in the league. I'll say this, though. This is what I love about this team. They're going to be tough to tackle. Imagine lining up 7 in the box and having to tackle Derrick Henry, who you have a problem tackling when you put 8 in the box. Now, because Julio Jones is out there, that safety can no longer cheat. That safety is going to stay out there, and that safety, he's going to have to help with Julio Jones. Bringing down Julio Jones is no easy task. Bringing down Corey Davis is no easy task. And bringing down Derrick Henry is the toughest task of all. I said Corey Davis, I'm sorry, I meant A.J. Brown. Bringing those three brothers down is not going to be easy. I could imagine defenses and defensive coordinators saying, we got to practice tackling this week because we're playing the Titans. First of all, it's hard enough to tackle Derrick Henry, who's the hardest guy to tackle. It's between him and Nick Chubb. I would rather try to tackle Nick Chubb, and I say that even with trepidation in my voice because he ain't easy to tackle either. But Derrick Henry just make dudes look stupid with that stiff arm, and he'll run you over too. And the brother can run. He can run a 40. He's a train, all right? He's a freight train coming right at you. Julio Jones ain't no easy guy to tackle. Neither is A.J. Brown. But that defense is going to hold them back. Because that offense is going to have to score a lot. They're going to have to score a lot. Another thing I'll say about the Rams last year, I forgot to mention they were the number 1 defense in the NFL when you totaled everything up. They came in at number one. Another reason why I got them at number at the three spot. I think that they'll hold on to that. The Titans are nowhere near that. That's why I got them at number five. Number six, I got the Buffalo Bills. And I can't wait to watch the Titans. I can't wait to watch the Titans. I can't wait to watch defenses just made look stupid and weak. And the highlight reels of Derrick Henry trucking dudes, stiff-arming dudes, Julio Jones running right through guys. It's going to be fun. Ryan Tannehill, man, you better step up. Better step up, because now you're really going to have a hot seat. Mike Vrabel, if this season y'all don't make at least one round further, you're going to be in some trouble there, man, because they're going all in right now. Titans are going all in. I expect the AFC Championship game to be Chiefs-Titans. I'm pretty sure people in Tennessee are expecting at least that. Y'all better get it done. Y'all got a squad. Buffalo Bills at number six for me. Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs. What else can I say? My problem with this team is that they need a better run game. Devin Singletary, I don't think, is going to cut it. I don't think he'll get it done. He's a good back, but he's not a great back. Obviously, you got your Davis White on the defense. This defense is pretty good. They showed that they are one of the best defenses in the NFL last season. And obviously, we know that Josh Allen made leaps and bounds like no other quarterback ever made for his third season, going into his third season. Josh Allen has arrived, and I think that he's here to stay. This team has a quarterback. This team has a legit offensive line. They give him time. They protect him. He gets the ball to Diggs. But Devin Singletary, I think, he just ain't all that. And I know you're going to say, well, the Chiefs won it. Yeah, but they got Pat Mahomes. You don't need a great running back if you got Pat Mahomes and Ty Hill. Yeah, you're going to say, well, the Bucs, they won it. Yeah, they also won without a great running back in the year 2002 with a stellar defense the way that they won it this year with a stellar defense. The 2000 Ravens, they ain't have an all-time back. They won on the back of a stellar defense with Ray Lewis leading that team. So there are exceptions. There are exceptions. But the Bills don't have the defense that the 2000 Ravens had. And the Bills don't have the defense that the Bucs have. And they don't got Tom Brady either. So, Bills at number six. Browns, I'm going number seven. I know that some people take the Ravens over the Browns because they got Lamar Jackson. But my thing is, with the Ravens, they lost Matthew Judon. They don't have a great pass rush outside of Calais Campbell. And he's going to be alone this season at the defensive tackle spot, at the defensive line. He's going to be alone this year. All right? That's my problem with the Ravens. They let go of two linebackers that could get to the quarterback. So their pass rush is not going to be as good. Marlon Humphrey's going to have to work a little harder. Marcus Peters going to have to work a little harder. Their free safety needs to be upgraded. Their strong safety needs to be upgraded. They won't be able to rush the passer as good as they did last year. So I think that they're going to take a step back. Their offensive line is going to be nasty. But I'm talking about the Browns right now at number seven. That's the reason why I don't put the Ravens over the Browns for what I just said. But the Browns, my concern is OBJ going to click with this team? Are they going to regress because OBJ is coming back? Or are they going to be better? Because if they are better than what they were, they could jump some teams here that I got in my top 10. They could be number three. They got the best, listen to me, the best pass-blocking offensive line in the NFL. The Ravens got the best run-blocking line in the NFL. I'm a little upset because of the Ravens line. I'll tell you why in a minute. But Brown's got the best pass blocking line in the NFL. Jerick Willis was a great pick for the Browns offensive line. He's gonna continue to be one of the best. Obviously, he's not Mekhi Becton out with the Jets, but he's in that second tier, though. He's going to be really good for a while. So Baker's blind side is pretty well covered up for a couple years to come. The guys in front of him, all five, they're all above average players, if not really good offensive linemen. He's got the best pass blocking offensive line in the league. He's going to have time to throw to OBJ. OBJ is just going to have to stop with all this give me the damn ball diva stuff. He's going to have to be a team player so they could get the ball to Jarvis Landry, so they could get the ball to Nick Chubb, so they could get the ball to Kareem Hunt, so they could get the ball to Cooper, because they got to get the ball in that brother's hands too. They got weapons. They should be better than number seven. But my whole thing is the defense really going to be that improved? I think that they're going to be really good. Jadeveon Clowney really is going to help the pass rush. But yet again, got to be strong also in the backfield. I don't think that their cornerbacks, their safety play, and their linebacking core is that good. They're going to get to some quarterbacks this year. Their linebacking core is going to be a little bit better, but their linebacking core was really weak last year. I think that their cornerback groups, it's just not that good. Their safety group is just not that good. But the offense can put on some points now. OBJ, to me, is the X factor on this team. He's got to come in and he's got to be able to play team ball, because they should be number three. But again, OBJ, he got to be a uniter, not a divider. On paper, to me, on paper, they're number three. But no team has ever won on paper. I got the Ravens at number eight. The offensive line is going to be dominant in the run game. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley's coming back. Bradley Bozeman is playing left guard. Their center spot is their weak spot, but their right guard is Kevin Zeitler. They got him from the Giants. Well, they got him from free agency, but Giants, I don't know what they were doing with that. And the reason why I was upset, because their right tackle is going to be Alejandro Villanueva from the Steelers. My Steelers. Nowhere near the top 10. Not this season. But four out of their five guys on the line, these guys are serious offensive linemen. It's going to be a nasty offensive line. It's going to be a dominant offensive line. Lamar Jackson's going to get some design runs that are going to go for some long, long yardage. They were the number one rush team in the NFL last season. They should be again. They have the best run blocking offensive line in the NFL. And another reason why I really like this team, they traded Orlando Brown Jr. to the Chiefs, but they got a pick back. And the pick that they got back ended up being Rashad Bateman. Really good wide receiver out of college. I think that he can make a difference if the offensive coordinator makes the right adjustments. Once those adjustments get made, and once they start passing the ball timely, because the run in Baltimore, that's going to be the bread and butter. That's going to be the bread and butter. They're going to be able to run the ball on anybody. I mentioned the four guys on the line. Lamar Jackson himself, also at quarterback. J.K. Dobbins is coming up. He's getting better. And let's not forget Mark Andrews, the sixth guy on the line as tight end. He's probably the best run blocking tight end in the league. Maybe. He definitely top five. He's the sixth guy on the line. They're going to be able to get Lamar Jackson some time to run or some time to pass. If the offensive coordinator draws up some good schemes to get Rashad Bateman open, to get Hollywood Brown open, they could do some things. I got the Seahawks at number 9. They won 12 games last year. Offensive line improved just slightly. I think they're one of the 10 best teams in the NFL. And when Russell Wilson is back there, you always got a shot to win it. DK Metcalf, you got a shot to win it. Number 10, I got the Chargers. The reason why I got the Chargers, they upgraded the offensive line. And one of the ways they upgraded the offensive line was getting Corey Linsley, center, former center, the Green Bay Packers, my boy Aaron Rodgers. They got him away from Green Bay. They signed him in Los Angeles. They also picked up Rashawn Slater in the draft. They really, really needed that. They upgraded the offensive line, y'all. The Chargers upgraded their offensive line. They're going to give Justin Herbert some time, and this brother can play. He's got a cannon for an arm. He can get away from some defensive guys. I'm telling you right now, Keenan Allen's going to get some more receptions this year. Austin Eckler is going to be better. They're going to go to work this year. Defense got some improvement. Derwin James is coming back. They also got Bosa over there. This team's going to be good. I think that they can also get, I think that they could put some work in. I think all these 10 teams right here, they got a shot to win it. But again, the NFL has a lot of parity. We could see a surprise team. I don't got a sleeper right now. I'll do that in another episode, but these are my 10 teams right here. Early power rankings. Early. Let's get into some baseball right now. I'm a Yankees fan, but I gotta get into a little bit of Mets. I live in New York. I gotta get into a little bit of Mets. At the time that I recorded this, it was July 1st, 2021. Significant because it is Bobby Bonilla Day. And I want to play something from the show Greeny in a little bit. But I want to talk to you about really quick what Bobby Bonilla Day is. All right. So starting in 2011, July 1st, the Mets started paying Bobby Bonilla $1.2 million because in 1999, they were going to buy him out for $6 million, but decided to negotiate a contract where they would not have to pay him $6 million up front, but pay him $30 million over the long haul. That sounds smart, huh? They negotiated an 8% interest on this contract. This is the New York Mets, y'all, not the New York Yankees. Don't get it twisted. Bobby Bonilla, at 58 years old, on July 1st, 2020, got paid $1.2 million. He got paid more than a lot of players in the MLB, a lot of young players, and players that will be on the All-Star team. So Bobby Bonilla is not going to be an All-Star. He's not even going to play baseball, but he's getting paid more than guys who are going to be paid, who are going to play on the All-Star team. Only the Mets could pull off something this clownish. It is a clown franchise. It's a clown franchise. I got a hilarious video up on my Facebook. Go to my Facebook, Chris Beniquez. You'll find it. I trolled Mets fans. I hit them up. Put a picture of Bobby Bonilla Day. I tagged them. Because this is a clown franchise. I got to remind them of that. Every July 1st. They also get reminded of that when they don't win the World Series. And they haven't won one since 1986. The year that I was born.
All right. Bobby Bonilla Day. You telling me that it's a good thing that the Mets didn't pay him $6 million back in 2001. I'm sorry, back in 1999, because he retired in 01. Back in 1999, while he still could play, and you're going to pay him until he's 72 years old? Who even knows if he's going to be alive when he's 72? I hope he is. I hope he is. But who even knows? Who are they going to be paying if God were to call him home that early? I just wonder. But again, these other Mets, not the Yankees. So, another crazy thing about Bobby Bonilla is that now the new owner of the Mets, Steve Cohen, is thinking about embracing Bobby Bonilla Day. So you're going to embrace the fact that you're going to pay him an extra $24 million. That sounds fun. I want to be there. Oh, I want to be there for Bobby Bo Day. When the new owner, Steve Cohen, says, hey, we're celebrating the fact that we're overpaying this man $24 million. That is going to be a sight to behold. I might go next July 1st to Citi Field. Put this on Facebook Live or something, or make a video out of it, or have it edited or whatever. I might just go to Bobby Bo Day next year, 2022, to see the clown show that these people are going to put on. They're going to celebrate overpaying this man $24 million over the life of 30 years. That's what they're going to do. Are you serious? You want to embrace Bobby Bonilla Day? And then there's Met fans out there that are clowns that are actually saying, oh, this is a day to be proud because Bobby Bo's getting money. I'm happy for Bobby Bonilla. Get your money, bro. Get your money. I would have done the same thing. But the problem is the clownness, the clownish thought of the New York Mets to say, well, we could pay him six now or 30 for 30 years. We're going to overpay him by $24 million. Let's go with that. This is the Mets, y'all. The Mets are going to pay Bobby Bonilla when he's 58 in 2021 more than Bo Bichette. The son of Dante Bichette, who was a great player. Bo Bichette's really becoming a great player himself. They're going to pay him more than him. And they're going to pay him a lot more than a lot of MLB players who are coming in for their first or second or third years. He's going to make more than 50% than some young players who are actively playing now that are better than him now at 58 because he can no longer do anything. And he comes out on social media every July 1st and says, happy Bobby Bo Day, everybody. Why? Because he's making out like a bandit at 58. All the way till he's 72, because these clowns decided to overpay him by $24 million. Clown franchise. Before I go, before this baseball segment is over, I just want you to listen to what Mike Greenberg on the show Greeny had to say. Take a listen here.
So I charged Hembo with finding some interesting facts about Bobby Bonilla Day. And of them, I think this might be my favorite. At the time that they agreed on this clause, on this deal, the population of planet Earth was 6.1 billion people. The world's projected population in 2035 is basically 9 million people. So from the Bonilla contract buyout agreement to fulfillment, the world will have 3 billion more people than it had. That will be an increase of 50%. There will be 50% more freaking people in the world when they finally stop paying them off than there were when they made the deal. That's an incredible stat. Among baseball's 30 active ballparks, 16 of them have opened since 2000, meaning the agreement to Bonilla's buyout has already outlasted more than half of baseball's stadiums. The best hitter in baseball this year is Vlad Guerrero Jr. He's making $605,000, about half of what Bonilla is earning at the age of 58, and will until he's 72.
72.
He'll be getting paid until he's 72 years old. Here are other things that are being projected to happen between now and the year 2035. New train technology that will travel three times faster than airplanes. Would you go on that train? Nuno, would you go on a train that goes three times faster than an airplane?
No, I'm good.
Oh, here's another one. Humans will be able to upgrade their senses with implants that detect more signals like radio waves, x-rays, etc. Essentially, the Mets could have given this guy $6 million and called it a day. Instead, they're going to be paying him until he's 72 at a time, when human beings will be able to perform their own x-rays without equipment, and trains will be going 1,000 miles an hour. That is what they decided to do. That is the true meaning of Bobby Bonilla Day. You know, in the way that we have the true meaning of Christmas and the true meaning of Festivus, and you know, we got a big holiday coming up in a few days, right? July 4th, Independence Day. We got the true meaning of Bobby Bonilla Day, which I think deserves to be commemorated every single year in this manner.
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day!